a particularly subtle operation of malicious mental malpractice. It is difficult to conceive a more subtle and disastrous way for malicious mental malpractice to operate in order to confuse and obscure, if not entirely obliterate, the light of truth for a Christian Scientist than by the perpetual argument that Mrs. Eddy was not the discoverer of Christian Science, that it had been discovered before, and that Mrs. Eddy had stolen the discovery and claimed the glory. Is it such an easy thing to steal Christian Science and so demonstrate it that one acquires all the glory? The works of Christian Science in healing every manner of sin, sickness, and death are, of course, its glory. And these are what Mrs. Eddy demonstrated in establishing Christian Science. Why should a Christian Scientist question the truth of Mrs. Eddy's discovery or accept so patent a suggestion of devilishness? If he entertains the question, it is because he is unaware of what is operating as his mind. Otherwise, he would instantly reject it and free himself from its malign influence. If one wished to destroy another's interest in any subject, would he not begin by casting reflections on the authority back of the subject? If successful in planting doubts as to the honor and integrity of that authority, would he not very quickly succeed in killing all further interest? This is exactly evil's purpose in making such suggestions to one beginning the study of Christian Science. It is a deadly purpose, and its result is inevitable if the malicious intent is not discerned and repudiated. No Christian Scientist can afford to doubt this. His days as a Christian Scientist are numbered if he is not instant in season and out of season in casting out these vicious suggestions of malicious mental malpractice. He cannot play with evil suggestions. Their poison is far-reaching. I have yet to see a Christian Scientist who allows his thought to be darkened by evil suggestions about Mrs. Eddy or her discovery or her demonstration of Christian Science make a success of Christian Science. It is impossible. The discoverer and the discovery, the revelator and the revelation invariably combine as one, and the victim of malicious mental malpractice alone questions this truism. Further, if he can be made to doubt or question the fact that the little book of Revelation, Science and Health, completely and finally reveals the translation of the negation back to mind, he will be equally lost. He will be looking for some further revelation to excuse his present lack of demonstration of his oneness with God. Truth is revealed. It needs only to be practiced, as Science and Health points out. No one can afford to harbor evil suggestions. Can a sane Christian Scientist doubt for a moment that this is true? Let the one who is allowing his thought to be tampered with in this way intelligently examine his thinking. If honest, he will see that Christian Science has lost its joy and inspiration for him, and that he is looking at it as cold philosophy or an abstraction, instead of as the loving, quickening presence of God. His light has gone out, and as Jesus said, "If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness?" A short time ago, I received a letter from a friend saying he had been distressed to find that earlier writers had discovered Christian Science and that Mrs. Eddy knew of what they had written and had gleaned her ideas from them without giving them credit. This friend is usually a clear thinker, but he had utterly failed to ask himself whether it is conceivable that the discoverer of Christian Science, whoever that discoverer might be, could under any imaginable circumstances keep his discovery from the world. Would not the mind that made that discovery spontaneously show forth the fruits of it by healing the sick, the sinning, and the dying? No discoverer could have done otherwise than did Mrs. Eddy, but did anyone else show forth such fruits? What is the discovery of Christian Science? Is it not, as Mrs. Eddy states, in rudimental divine science, the law of God, the law of good, interpreting and demonstrating the divine principle and rule of universal harmony? Then how could anyone, discovering that law, fail to express it? Christian Science is not the discovery of a matter law, but of mind law, and the mind that discovers it would have to be in accord with the mind it discovered. Otherwise, the discovery could not be made. Christian Science is a spiritual discovery, not a material one. It is of mind, not of matter. How absurd to imagine that anyone could discover Christian Science and not use it in such a manner that the whole world could see it. Inevitably, it would be his very mind and would have to be expressed. Because God, as Science and Health says, is not separate from the wisdom he bestows, he could not have failed to bestow upon the one near enough to him to discover his allness the ability to prove that allness in doing the works which Jesus did. Who has ever scientifically done this except Mrs. Eddy? Even Mrs. Eddy's followers are but slowly discerning the path she so clearly and carefully pioneered. The slowness of this progress is almost a disgrace to the discovery. Why this slowness? Fundamentally, it is due to lack of real spiritual consecration, together with ignorance of that which causes the slowness. It is because malicious mental malpractice with its insidious suggestions is accepted instead of being rejected the instant it raises its voice. Until this is done, the progress must be slow. The consecrated Christian Scientist understands that Christian Science was the mind of Mrs. Eddy, just as God was the mind of Jesus. Mrs. Eddy could not be less than one with her mind. To love God as divine mind and leave Mrs. Eddy out of that love is not possible and must inevitably end in failure and disillusionment. The Pharisees thought they could love God and hate Jesus and the prophets who had shown God forth. But could they succeed in this attempt? No, it was a dismal failure, and their cup of bitterness was full to the brim. God and his idea cannot be separated. Consequently, sorrow comes to the one who tries to separate them. Noumenon and phenomenon are forever one. The Christian Scientist should guard against the subtle, malicious argument intended to poison him, no matter how small a degree, against Mrs. Eddy and thus against Christian Science. Alertness to duty, Mary Baker Eddy. In order to progress, the Christian Scientist must praise daily for deliverance from the hypnosis which makes him believe that it is chance instead of direction by malicious minds that are at work, producing all the various phases of discord and disease with which he is constantly confronted. Nothing could be more pernicious than this argument of Satan, because if the Christian Scientist can be misled into dealing with the seen instead of the unseen, evil will continue its domination and control, and the cause of Christian Science will seem to disappear. Did not true Christianity seem to become enmeshed by the same subtle influences? Evil cannot be destroyed unless recognized as the influence and result of evil appearing as direction by malicious minds and cast out as such. When all evil is seen and understood as direction by malicious minds, it is readily destroyed. To quote again Mrs. Eddy's full statement, "If any honest Christian Scientist can be deceived into believing that it is chance, not direction by malicious minds which are at work, that ignorance instead of sin is what he has to meet at all times, this error prevents him from understanding enough of the question to ensure his own defense, and leaves him in the power of animal magnetism, perhaps temporarily relieved of his suffering, rejoicing in a hope of freedom which he afterwards finds to be in vain. Test this for yourself, but remember that the only way to destroy this insidious influence and direction is to see first the nothingness of the whole lie of malicious influence, and then feel in your heart that God is the one and only mind, and therefore his direction is the only direction and is your direction. There can be no true love without this understanding that all evil appears as the operation of malicious minds. But be sure that you understand that this appearance is just the language of evil itself. Otherwise, evil must seem personal, and the so-called persons expressing it, the devil. The devil you cannot love. So, if you really desire to show forth God as love by loving, you must see that the whole of sin, disease, and death, including, of course, every sense of finiteness, all phases of malicious dispositions and characteristics, are the direct influence of malicious minds and have nothing to do with the person expressing them, except insofar as he is victimized into voicing them. Did not Jesus declare, "But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire"? Why? Because that made evil personal and impossible to heal. Watch unceasingly on this point, because this same secret influence will argue to you that it is not direction by malicious minds, but just your own thinking that is at work. Evil must argue this way, because if you were convinced that all error is direction by malicious minds, evil's day would be doomed. Keep reminding yourself that evil is not something over there, malicious mind or minds, for that is only as it seems. It is always right here, operating as your mind. It seems to be over there because it is evil appearing as consciousness, and consciousness must have that whereby it is made known. You are not deceived, for you know that evil is always one and always here. However numerous its appearances, and regardless of where, you rejoice at its so-called multiplicity, because that constantly declares the infinity of good that it negates. Oh, that pen could express the infinite importance of being alert! What a change would take place with the Christian Scientist! Apathy would vanish and confidence would reign, and finally evil would cease its arguments, having been reversed, translated into its true language, good. But just so long as a cancer is thought of as misplaced cells, tuberculosis as a diseased lung, diabetes as diseased pancreas, bad temper as an ugly disposition, a thief as an unprincipled scoundrel, a murderer as a vicious villain, and so on, such conditions cannot be healed. They are never what they appear to be, but are always the result of direction by malicious minds. The only remedy is to replace the belief of direction by malicious minds with the absolute realization that all direction is by divine mind. You know you are never dealing with aught but mind, never with a thing. For as science and health declares, all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Unwillingness to accept this truth bars the door of your mind to beholding its inestimably beneficent power and leaves you at the mercy of the subtle influence of direction by malicious minds. Why cling to evil's arguments? Arouse yourself and throw off the mesmerism that would hold you in ignorance of what is terrorizing you with its suggestions. Mesmerism has no power to harm you and cannot act as your mind if you are awake to its operations. But if you will not awaken and handle this evil, you will dream on in the darkness of chaos and old night. What could make an earnest Christian Scientist, one who for many years has faithfully striven to practice Christian Science, become dissatisfied with it or with his demonstration of it? What could cause him to be attracted by writers whose theories and ideas of being are so unlike the exact statements made by Mrs. Eddy in Science and Health and her other writings, which he previously loved so deeply and found so helpful? It should be far more natural for him to hold tenaciously to that which he has proved to be true in however slight a degree than to be thus attracted. That is what he would do, were it not for the malicious arguments of the mental malpractitioners deliberately attempting to substitute their argument of unbelief and dissatisfaction for his natural inclination and confidence. It is wholly unnatural for a Christian Scientist left to his own impulse to turn from what he knows to be the truth of being. Nothing but willful and malicious interference could cause such a catastrophe. It is entirely the result of mischievous suggestion exercised for the sole purpose of harassing and distressing him, and finally putting out his light. The only remedy is to destroy the belief that there is malicious mind to operate as malicious mental malpractitioners influencing and controlling his thinking. This is his only help. He should use it at once. If he does not apply this remedy, his light will fail and finally be extinguished, and he will be under the delusion that he no longer cares for Christian Science. But he knows he does care for Christian Science. He knows he loves Christian Science. He knows it is the one and only way to obtain heaven and harmony here and now, and he will not allow any subtle suggestion calling itself his mind to rob him of this knowing. Mrs. Eddy lovingly admonishes in Science and Health, "Wait for your reward, and be not weary in well-doing. If your endeavors are beset by fearful odds, and you receive no present reward, go not back to err, nor become a sluggard in the race. When the smoke of battle clears away, you will discern the good you have done and receive according to your deserving. Love is not hasty to deliver us from temptation, for love means that we shall be tried and purified. Pray to be delivered from a false sense of peace, which would lead you into handling that which has no real bearing on the case. The law of Christ or Christian Science opens our eyes to the fact that all error is malicious animal magnetism and every erroneous condition the specific result of direction by malicious minds and not one's own thought." Was it not to emphasize this that Mrs. Eddy felt it imperative to state in her church manual, under the significant heading of Alertness to Duty, that it was the duty of every Christian Scientist to defend himself daily against aggressive mental suggestion and not be made to forget nor to neglect his duty to God, to his leader, and to mankind? Notice the daily. Do you think Mrs. Eddy would have made that request unless this defense was of paramount importance? You know as metaphysicians that this is true, and you also know that if you do not pray daily, you will shipwreck your progress. It is not surprising that Mrs. Eddy should add in the same connection that by your works ye shall be judged and justified or condemned. Why? Because your works will show whether or not you are defending yourself against aggressive mental suggestion and destroying the direction by malicious minds. One of the most insidious and aggressive forms of this direction by malicious minds comes as the pollution of the air by hourly and daily harangues and mental absurdities. Because radio has many uses, it has, by the false sense of the law of reversal, many abuses. Since radio is rarefied matter, it is a nearer approximation to mentality, hence its hidden danger and the great need for carefully guarding against the subtlety of its use for suggestions, political, financial, and religious. The Christian Scientist must think alone with God and preserve the tablet of his mind from every blemish free. There is only one way to counteract this constant effort of malicious minds to direct your every act, and that is to be consciously directed by divine mind every moment. To ensure this continuous direction requires constant alertness and watchfulness, never to deal with effect, but always with cause. What constitutes being awake to the suggestions of malicious mental malpractice? Science and Health declares, more than profession is requisite for Christian demonstration. Few understand or adhere to Jesus' divine precepts for living and healing. Why? Because his precepts require the disciple to cut off the right hand and pluck out the right eye. That is, to set aside even the most cherished beliefs and practices, to leave all for Christ. To be an alert Christian Scientist is not easy. It requires the same quality of earnestness and sacrifice which success in any line of work demands. First comes consecration, willingness to forsake the ease of material sense for the attainment of the goal. And secondly, perseverance, which never ceases working until that goal is attained. Jesus said, in illustrating this ceaseless perseverance and its inevitable result, though he will not rise and give him because he is his friend, yet because of his importunity he will rise and give him as many as he needeth. Physical courage has always been lauded by the human mind, but moral courage, which is a higher sense of courage, a nearer approximation to mind activity, is seldom recognized. In Christian Science, moral as well as physical courage is requisite. Science and Health says, it requires courage to utter truth. At times, it also requires tremendous so-called physical courage to meet the lies of material sense when it declares pain, suffering, and anguish to be real and true. But every Christian Scientist has learned with joy that when he stands unflinchingly on what he knows is true, the reward is great. He also knows that sooner or later, every question must be settled on the side of right, and that regardless of the degree of moral and physical courage required, the present tests do not become lighter to the one who puts off doing the thing he knows is right. The old saying, procrastination is the thief of time, is truer perhaps in the practice and demonstration of Christian Science than in any other activity. Duty postponed does not thereby become easier, but the reverse. For usually, a conscious stricken sense of unrest torments when work is left undone. Christian Science insists upon doing today the work of today, and understanding what that work is, and because of the allness of mind, finds abundant time for its accomplishment. When work is well done, malicious mental malpractice can find no way to reach you, no antenna through which its suggestions can operate. Remember, your antenna is constantly operating. Watch that it is ever in oneness with God. The Christian Scientist is actively about his Father's business. He is wide awake to the fact that evil ever keeps pace with good, and he acts accordingly. He is not hurried, but to him each hour is valuable. Because God is constantly unfolding to his own idea the infinity of good, the wise man does not miss this wondrous unfoldment. He knows that infinity itself is not too long to show forth the glories of infinite mind. The Apostle Paul said that Jesus, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. The Christian Scientist, like Jesus, does not make too much of the cross because, in translating the cross back to the crown, he knows the joy that is set before him and continually awaiting his acceptance. If the practice of Christian Science takes a full measure of physical and moral courage, it is worth it. Then give it your all. The pearl priceless is obtained only by selling all that thou hast and buying it. Buying it means exchanging every material concept for the spiritual sense through consecrated insistency. It is not giving up things, but concepts. If this seems a hard cross, it is made easy by the discernment of its true nature as the negation of God, which offers you, when reversed, the very presence of all good, and by expressing joy and appreciation for all that Christian Science holds for you. No one ever regretted carrying that cross. Mrs. Eddy expresses exactly what constitutes Christian Science and what makes a Christian Scientist in her clear statement in Miscellany. To live so as to keep human consciousness in constant relation with the divine, the spiritual, and the eternal is to individualize infinite power, and this is Christian Science. Does not keeping human consciousness in constant relation with the divine mean exactly what you are doing when you refuse to deal with the effects of evil, the beast and the false prophet, matter and mentality, and turn your whole attention unreservedly to the cause, malicious mind, and translate malicious mind back to its reality, divine mind? Thus doing, malicious mental malpractice may knock at your door, but you can say in regard to it as did Jesus, "The prince of this world cometh and hath nothing in me." In other words, malicious argument cannot present to me a single one of its lies to which I am not awake and which I am not vigorously translating back to the truth that the lie is the lie about. The Holy City, Purity, Perfection, Peace. Science and Health declares, in proportion to his purity is man perfect, and perfection is the order of celestial being which demonstrates life in Christ, life spiritual ideal. And Christ Jesus declared, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect." He did not compromise with the necessity for perfection, but by his attitude indicated that perfection must be attained and recognized as discernibly present, and not something to be anticipated at some far-off future period. Evil suggestion would have perfection, whether of health or of character, relegated to the distant future, whereas the Christian Scientist realizes that to put off perfection separates him from the present kingdom of heaven. To the Christian Scientist, the kingdom of heaven is a state of mind and has nothing to do with conditions. Consequently, his purpose and effort is thinking in terms of perfection, and he knows that perfection means everything in its correct or perfect place, obedient to its divine principle, and that he knows is peace. No fitter closing can be given to this book than to quote Mrs. Eddy's words of wisdom given to some friends, showing how this goal of purity, perfection, and peace is to be won and malicious mind silenced in divine mind. We each dwell in our own world of consciousness. We look out through the windows of this consciousness and behold the passing procession of mortal mind. Day after day, we have been lured forth, have been pressed into the whirl, lost our individual peace and poise in divine mind, and found ourselves dragged through the meanness, the uncleanness, and pain of the procession. We seek to regain our own house of consciousness, wiser for the experience, thinking we will not again become a part of error's pageant. But here, let the newer understanding of love guard well your door. Stay in your own house of mental demonstration. Keep your peace. For idle curiosity, criticism, or even false sympathy may lure you forth. Wherein lies the wisdom of the serpent? To hide itself. Therefore, hide yourself in the understanding of Christian Science, be it great or small. We have all, in some way, needed the experience we have had. Never be found as a Christian Scientist mourning over an experience. It is a thing of the past, but not so the manifold power and presence of God resulting therefrom. And the words of Jesus through John, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. No more tempest-tossed human concepts advancing and receding, as defined by Mrs. Eddy. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them, and be their God. And he said unto me, It is done. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. And he showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem. The city lieth foursquare, and it had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. And the gates of it shall not be shut at all by day, for there shall be no night there. And they shall bring the glory and honor of the nations into it, and there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie. And the Spirit and the bride say, Come. And let him that heareth say, Come. And let him that is athirst come. And whosoever will, let him take the water of life freely.